Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm doing so well. That's all. Well, Andrew, how are you?
I am also well. I spent the day down a deep rabbit hole of shellfishing and harvesting shellfish and mollusks on the Oregon
like
coast.
An informational rabbit hole.
Yeah, like yeah. An actual, like a worthwhile rabbit hole. It took a few, you know.
You weren't like on a rabbit hole physically while you were.
No. I was in front of the YouTube and reading on foraging, as they call it, for shellfish on the Oregon coast. So I still know nothing about it, but I feel sufficiently equipped to go, and I'm going to take my kids next weekend.
What do you mean you know nothing about it?
Well, I've never done it.
Oh, I see. You've got no practical experience.
Yeah, none practical experience, but I have just enough confidence and philosophical and technical know-how to take my kids out next weekend. We're going to throw some crab pots and let them soak, and we're going to go harvest some mussels, and we're going to try harvesting some urchin.
Yeah,
and we're just gonna see how it goes. I think we'll all get wet, and the worst case scenario is we just get nothing except a yummy bowl of clam chowder.
This is the 21st century way, right? Is to learn about a thing. You know, there was no like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, maybe. If you wanted to
do something you didn't grow up doing.
That's right. If you wanted to learn how to harvest mussels, you'd either have to like find somebody who knew what they were doing, or you'd just have to go like fumble your way through it. Maybe you read a book.
I think regulations were a little bit more lax then too. One of my big fears of participating in new wildlife related outdoor pursuits
is
that regulations are so complicated. Like you need in-house counsel to walk you through how to not accidentally fuck yourself up. Like about 5 years ago, state of Oregon is state-managed wildlife, like not by county, it's all state-managed wildlife. So every piece of wildlife legally belongs to the state of Oregon. And in order to get a hunting license, you have to buy it. But there's a few kinds of different licenses, and then there's dozens of types of endorsements and tags and permits. And at some point, it's just like, okay, what do I actually need to have? So there's one pack that they sell. It's called the Sports Pack. And theoretically, if you buy it, you have everything. And then you choose your big game tags for the rest of the year, and you're good. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to...
Yeah, that gives you like a salmon steelhead tag. It gives
your Columbia River Basin endorsement. Yep. Your like it gives you... Your upland,
virtually
the only thing you have to buy is your federal waterfowl stamp,
or your big game tags.
But those are included in it. You just have to select your tags.
I see.
So I go and I do that, and I was like, okay, well, I live pretty close to this wildlife area that is really common for hunting. I know there's going to be upland birds there. There's probably going to be some rabbits. I know people duck hunt here, and I just kind of want to get a lay of the land. So I go and I just kind of meander around in the brush and I don't kick anything up, but I brought a shotgun in case I kicked up a pheasant or a duck or a rabbit or just something. But there's nothing, and I kind of walk around. I'm like, okay, I think this is a doable place. I'm prepared to come out here again more deliberately and go on about my life. And I'm walking out of this area and there's Oregon State Police manages our wildlife enforcement in the state of Oregon. Some places have game wardens or like,
but we have a Department of Fish and Wildlife too, but they run adjacent.
They're scientists.
The state police,
yeah they're scientists. Right. State police does
and game enforcement. They have enforcement actions too, but basically it's the state police.
Yep. Yeah, so they do enforcement action. And I see the game troop and he's sitting there in his silver truck and he's checking people coming out of the area and he's ripping sights. And I was like, oh, cool. I have everything. I know I have everything. And he's like, hey, can I see your license? Like, guys, what are you doing? I'm like, I was just out here kind of kicking around. Like I wasn't really doing anything, but you know, I was prepared for anything. And he's like, okay, well, let me see your license. And I pull out my license and I hand it to him and he's like, come with me. I was like, what the fuck could I have done wrong? I bought the thing. I did it. I just said, give me everything to this 18-year-old at the Bi-Mart counter. And he printed it out and handed it to me and it should be good. He takes me back to his computer and he's like, look, so here's the thing. Like, you're not legal right now. You don't have anything printed on your license. Like, you just have your license. And I was like, but I bought the thing, man. He's like, yeah, but they didn't print it. So not only, like, it's not just, like, you have to know all the things. The person selling you this has to know all the things. So that was a huge tangent. Oregon fish and game laws are, every state, are really complicated and scare me to death. The only good experience you and I ever had together with license checks was when we lost the anchor on the boat. And we were like, we lost the anchor. And they were like, just show us your phone. We trust you. I was like, thanks, guys, because that could have been bad.
Oregon's done a good job modernizing their requirements, you know, where you can have basically everything on your phone, right? It's almost worry-free, or, you know, what's the phrase I'm looking for? It's pretty easy now compared to what it was even 5 years ago.
Yeah, because everything was paper, and it was different pieces of paper, and you had to keep it in this little folding plastic book inside of a Ziploc bag. Now I just keep it in my phone in a Ziploc bag, but I don't even need the Ziploc bag in my phone anymore because they're waterproof.
Yeah, I had a waterproof, I had one of those waterproof salmon and steelhead tags 1 year, and I can't remember what I did, but I basically left it, I think I had it like in a flap and it came open and the sun cooked it, and so it destroyed my tag. And I was like, well, I don't know. I should be careful. The time with you that we got stopped in the drift boat was the only time I've ever, I guess they didn't stop us because
we were unable
to stop. But that's the only time I've ever run into.
They didn't even offer help.
I've caught, just, you know, said
good luck,
thousands of fish. And that's the only time I've ever run into any sort of enforcement.
I've never been outside in an outdoor pursuit, but for one time we went steelhead fishing in Deadwood. That's the only time I've never not been checked.
Isn't that
fun? Like, I know the troops. Like, I've worked with most of them now at this point.
Well, in any event, we're not here to talk about licensure or hunting or fishing. Rather, we're here to talk about watches. And Andrew, did you have a chance to prep anything for today's show?
I have never prepped for the show, not even once.
Well, in any event, why don't you take us away?
I'm going to take us away. I want to talk briefly about an interview that you can find. Where did I listened to the podcast. I think it was on Hodinkee's website.
You can find it at Warren Wound.
But there's a Warren Wound article also, and this is something we talked about in really broad strokes a couple months ago, in that Warren Wound acquired Laurier.
Yeah.
And now there's a little bit of information sharing on what that looked like and why it looked like. And there's a few outlets carrying interviews with Lorenzo Ortega talking about the decision-making calculus behind merging or being acquired by Warren and Wound. As we all hoped, the Laurier family is kind of remaining present. Lorenzo is staying on as the creative director. They brought in a general manager. But ultimately, if when you read the or listen to the interviews, it came down to a scaling issue. Lauren and Lorenzo just ultimately weren't, it seems like they didn't feel confident in their ability to continue to scale up the brand in the way that we, as the watch world, were insisting upon. We were getting tired of never being able to buy Laurier, and their goal was to create accessible watches. So they were also tired of not being able to sell us their watches. And it became all consuming because for this entire time, these last 11 years that Laurier has been in production, it's been Lauren and Lorenzo. They don't have a team. They don't have staff. Obviously they have manufacturers and partners and stuff, but they're doing it.
Yeah.
And it was just time to make a decision that would make scalability a reality. And that's kind of, I think, one of the options that we determined would be most likely.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see this new chapter of Laurier still informed by Lorenzo's design ideas, which have just been fantastic, with the ass of Worn and Wound and the infrastructure that that brings. And I think it'll be an interesting, I think it'll be interesting, and I think it'll be good. I think I was a little concerned about it, but I'm not concerned about it anymore.
Yeah, you mentioned Lorenzo staying on as creative director. And I do believe Lauren and Lorenzo are both still minority owners.
Yes.
So they've kept a minority share. Lorenzo staying on as creative director. Again, I agree with you. That's a great move. But they've also hired Ilya Riven.
I don't remember how to say his name.
Of Worn and Wound fame. Ilya, longtime host of the podcast, the Worn and Wound podcast. And I found out today he was Worn and Wound's very first employee. So he's...
Who's been at Grand Seiko for a little while.
Yeah. He spent, I think, over a decade with Worn and Wound. And now he's come back as the general manager of this new version of Laurier. So I think that's all kind of exciting. That's fun. I think if you're a big sort of curmudgeon skeptic, you might grumble, but I think for everybody else, this sounds really cool. I think it's a great thing. And
if I'm the excited. Alternative is not having Laurier anymore, this is the best thing, right?
Sure.
I mean, yeah, I'm happy for them. I'm excited to see what it looks like to have stable inventory of Laurier, and also perhaps a little bit faster flash to bang for production and new models and limited edition models. I think we'll see some more fun stuff. I think back on the special edition they did with that was their watch company, their watchmaker.
Oh, yeah. Blanking on their name too.
It wasn't Brooklyn. It's not Brooklyn. It's Grand Central Time.
Grand Central Time.
Yeah, that's Grand right. Central Time. I think about that run that they did, and it was just fantastic. And I talked to Lorenzo at Wind Up about that watch and kind of what inspired it, and his thinking on what this idea of a watch looks like moving forward, and was really excited by it. And I'm excited to see what happens when he can just be the creative director.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on with that. Andrew, as much as we talk about Rolex on this show, we don't actually talk about Rolex that often.
We have a show, I think, called I Hate Rolex, which also means that all of their limited release that you have to sign up for and sign a pledge that you've never publicly disparaged them. I still can't believe that. That's something that you have to do for Omega. You have to sign a loyalty pledge.
I wanted to talk about Rolex tonight because Rolex had a big Watches and Wonders, a big 2026 Watches and Wonders scene. Lots of sort of interesting stuff. As it turns out, it was the stuff that really didn't come out during Watches and Wonders that I find most compelling. So of note, at Watches and Wonders, Rolex announced a new pattern for the Datejust, specifically their green ombre Datejust. It is a beautiful watch. I don't know if we talked about it on the show or not, but it is a beautiful watch, gradient from black on the outside to a sort of cheeky green on the inside. Gorgeous watch. Well, that was, I think, first announced in the 41, but they also have that in 36, and also I think the 31 smaller.
Just 36 and 41 for now.
That was great. But again, it's not really something that What I do care about, though,
I want Rolex in black or white.
Is that Rolex has completely revamped every single one of its Roman numeral Datejust models. So the old Datejust Roman numeral is gone, and the new Datejust Roman numeral is here. So all in, it's about 100 new SKUs.
Yes. Can I amend my I want Rolex in black or white statement? If it's a gold case, I'm okay with green. I don't like the ombre. Gold or two-tone, I want green. Otherwise, black or white.
So what they've done here is they have taken... So I have always been very low on Rolex's Roman numerals that it uses on its Datejust. They just feel stodgy to me. They've used this serif font for the last couple of years, and the pieces are all connected, and I just really not a huge fan. They've done away with that. They have updated this to a much, much more modern sans serif Roman numeral font where each individual numeral is disconnected from the other. So, for instance, at 4, you've got 4 eyes, 4 bars, sans serif.
They're 4 ones, dipshit.
Okay, I think they might be eyes, but... And the bars don't connect, right? Also true on the 8, V-I-I-I, they don't connect. It is just a very sharp, it's a simple font. It is not a fancy font, which I think is what I like about it. They've updated every single mm-hmm. Roman numeral date just across the spectrum. I'm hearing some folks say this is similar to the new, day date Roman numeral, and I guess it is, but that's different. That's a more modern font, and I'm not wild about that either, but I love this. I think this is such a low-key, subtle,
but it's excellent so change. Big. It's such a significant change.
Yeah.
Right? It's a full redesign of this really classic watch that hasn't really been updated that much.
Yeah,
this is a big shift, and this is a really modern looking font.
It takes a watch that I would never consider buying and turns it into something that I'm like, okay.
I think you have my attention. Wear that. Yes.
I would wear that. I would have never purchased a prior version of the Datejust with Roman numerals. Never. I just do not like it. And I like this a lot. So this is cool.
I'm trying to look at I want to see a side-by-side.
Yeah, I mean, if you just Google Roman numeral Datejust, you'll see a picture.
Well, not today, because they're all the new ones.
Not my thing. But and I do know they've introduced, so it's 100 SKUs. I think there's some new colors, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. We don't need to talk all. The news is the new Roman numerals.
There's tighter to the... Those connecting points almost made the Roman numerals look like they were a little bit melty or streaky or perhaps lazy cursive.
And just stodgy too. I mean, it's just...
Well, this is a stodgy watch.
It doesn't have to be.
It's clearly not anymore. Now it's really sporty.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be
stodgy. Kind of Nomos feel on the Roman numerals, right?
Andrew, that is exactly the comparison that I had in my head. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But with the fluted bezel and I like it.
I'm a big fan. Yeah. Nomos is exactly what came to mind for me as well.
Like very modern, but understated. Yeah.
And of course, this watch is not similar to a Nomos, so don't...
No, but the font feels that very modern... without being silly or like whimsical.
Yeah.
It's a very businessy font. This is an X, this is an I, these are them.
Right.
What's like next? Very German in its design. Okay.
It is German. It does feel German. It's design.
Orient Stretto Date and Day Night collections. We have 10 new models from them because when Orient does it, they do it all the way.
It's not 100.
It will be. It will be because you know these are going to come in 3 different sizes. So the Stretto collection came out last year. You need help again? You need glasses?
I got it.
Okay. inspired by architecture and scenery. And now we have some new colors. And the one that I actually was surprised that I liked is this on the Stretto Dane night, this blue and orange and light blue with an orange minute track.
You like that?
I'm surprised, but I really like looking at it. I kind of hate this watch because Orient did it in the Orient way where the sizing is kind of funny. It's only got 50 meters of water resistance. The price is good on it, but these are 41.5 millimeter cases. They're 48 lug to lug and they're 13 thick. And it just, they did the Orient thing with a 22 millimeter lug width where the sizing is just messed up. Everything about this watch is just proportionally wrong, but this colorway on this Stretto Day and Night, it might redeem it for me. Like if I could, if I saw one of these in the metal and it was actually that vibrant and these, if these color or these product photography colors held up in person, I would get one of these in a heartbeat, even with the strange proportions, because they're $500, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of a safe flyer to have a subdial calendar or a subdial day movement and a subdial moon phase or day night. It's not real moon phase, but a day night indicator because it's Orient. Yeah. It's $500. Yeah, I like that color combination.
Yeah, you know,
the Strettos I could do without any of the colors. There's like a weird half and half dark blue, light blue, a green.
Orient has Stephanie, just been
pink and orange
releasing watches left and right. And I have to wonder, who's buying these? I don't know. They seem to be selling watches in Western markets, or at least selling watches to Western markets.
I've never seen one in the wild.
Who is buying Orients?
Is this like maybe it's got a huge like India, China, Japan market,
and they're just
throwing stuff over here to see if maybe it'll get some traction.
If it gets traction, yeah. I mean, I see a PRX probably once a week in the wild, maybe
easy.
Maybe every other week.
And it's not the same person wearing it. You see a PRX in the wild on a different stranger once a week.
I never see an Orient. Never. Mm-mm. Ever. Right? I see Seikos. I see Tissots. I see Bulova's.
The guy I work with has an Orient. He has a Mako.
Okay. I mean, it's a great watch. I just never see them.
No.
And I recommend them to people. I'm like, you really ought to look at a Kamasu because that's such a, you know, but I never see them, never see Orient watches. I think I saw a Bambino once and I was like, whoa, that's a Bambino.
But, you know, for being fair, like how often do you see Omega?
All the time, man. I see Omegas all the time.
Well, you work in a slightly different environment. Yeah. No, that's fair. But you don't see, you know, you don't see Bell and Ross. You don't see Breitlings very often. You don't see, you know, you see Apple Watches everywhere and PRXs and
Seiko. I see Breitlings more often than I see Orient.
Are you doing a lot of criminal work?
Well, I do work as an attorney, but I see Breitling more often than I see Orient. Yeah, I mean, I just never see Orient. I just don't know who's buying these. I think the Stretto is a terrific model. I think, you know, they come in at 11.2 thick, good dimensions. It's a really nice sport watch, you know, hacking, hand winding, F672 movement, F6722 movement. I mean, it's a great watch. I just don't know. It's also who's got a
20 millimeter lug width. The size on the Stretto itself, the Stretto is great. The day night is a shit show.
I see Hamilton way more often than I see Orient. I never see Orients in the wild. Mm-mm. But they're, I think
we should stop saying it like that. It sounds like it could be taken out of context and used as a soundbite to support our Omega Blasphemy. I feel
like they've had like 100 new models released this year.
That's every year. They are churning it out. They are a damn gumball machine of SKUs.
I don't think it's every year. I think this year has been special. They've been pounding the pavement this year. I hate to do this, but I'm going to talk about a watch that I wanted to like, and then I found out that I didn't like it. Precedus. That's how we say that, right?
Precedus. Yeah, I think that's the one we've settled on.
Precedus has signed a multi-year deal to be, the officially licensed U.S. Army watch program supplier. So they are the supplier for the official licensed U.S. Army watch program.
Which doesn't issue watches, so it's kind of a weird...
Which is not an issue watch. That's right. So Precedus is the Arizona-based military homage watch company, has signed this multi-year agreement with the Army to produce licensed Army watches. What does that mean? That means that these are watches that are not necessarily supply watches. As far as I know, they're not even NSN. They're not even NSN.
Will Marathon still carry watches?
I think so, yes. So all this means is the Precedus is now making watches with U.S. Army on the dial. The
stupid Army Star. God, I hate that logo.
And I more than, hate them.
More
I
than anything the them. Army has ever done. More than I hate this logo. More than I hate the green PT jacket that was actually just a trash bag. And wasn't waterproof, but it kept all the moisture in. So you were just sweaty. You weren't warm. You were wet and cold. I hate that logo. Couldn't they have come up with something better with a company that designs things and been like, maybe let's do an update?
So there is some good news here. So first, that they're selling A11 watches in both quartz and automatic models. The quartz models are coming in at $225. The autos are coming in at $335. If you're a service member, you can get these straps customized with your rank, which is kind of clever. It's Precedus. So they're assembled in the United States and Arizona. A11 is a 42 millimeter stainless steel case. We've got 100 meters of water resistance. They say 330 feet because America.
Fuck yeah.
A big U.S. Army logo at 12 o'clock, NH35 movements, double dome sapphire. This is a good watch. It's 12 and a half thick, but that includes that big ass crystal. 49.5 millimeter lug to lug, 22 millimeter strap width, which I'm not wild about, but it actually works with the watch.
It's because of the dome.
Fine.
I think that proportion works right because it's kind of long lugs and that dome of the bezel and crystal.
Full blasted field case. We do not have 24-hour time on any of these as far as I know. No 24-hour track, which is a little funny.
But we have topography in the dial on two of them.
Yep, we do have topo dials on two of them. Yeah, no, look, these are cool, man, but the Army logo sucks so bad. Oh, it's the worst.
It looks so cheap.
Tacky.
It looks like a private first class was told, design a logo. Here is Editor. Here is Photoshop. Here is PowerPoint. And here's Paint.
This looks like an inexpensive souvenir watch. And yes. They had some opportunities to do something really cool, and I think that someone has swung and missed, swing and a miss. For me, this looks like a cheap souvenir.
Like
watch.
Use the Army Eagle that we have on the bus driver hats. Use.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not gonna.
Anything other than that stupid star and the word Army. Is for Army. R is for Army. M is for Army. And Y Army.
And, you know, we say this, I think we have a dog in this fight, both of us. We say this as service members, right? We say this as veterans. We say this as people who theoretically...
My Stetson and Spurs hang in my home. on a rack.
Theoretically, might be inclined to pick this up. It is a big miss for me.
If it wasn't. And this is not on Procetus, I think.
I don't think so either.
Because I like the Procetus A11.
Yeah, and this is an attractive watch, by the way. Fully blasted case. It's their Dog Bowl mid case, which I think is terrific. It's a nice looking watch, but for that ugly, ugly logo at 12 o'clock, it's just wrong.
What's but for?
But for? But for?
For pooping. It's not a Procetus miss. It's a collaboration miss. Yeah. Again, they sent the wrong people into this design meeting and they were like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. I think if Procetus had been given the latitude to design something more fitting, they would have done it.
Yeah. They're working with some sort of marketing department and the marketing department screwed it up.
Yeah. They shit it all over in the bed and rolled around in it and thrashed about and
fucking
said,
dipshit headset. Yes.
Yeah, that's a bummer. That's a bummer.
It's a stupid watch. It sucks. It should be awesome, and instead,
you remember that French Navy watch we looked at last week?
Yeah, yeah.
I loved that watch.
I know.
I don't like this watch at all.
What's next, Andrew?
Another company that we haven't talked about in a while, but a company that I like. I think you like them. Veyers introduced a new colorway.
Love Veyer.
In a GM2 or a GMT. The new Veyer G2 Fairway GMT, which is a dedicated golf GMT that allows you to cheat while you count strokes while you're golfing. The green on it is it's a really great green.
Talk about a golf watch? I swear we just very recently talked about a golf watch that had a similar scoring complication.
We talked about cricket. We didn't talk about golf, I don't think.
Well, so this...
We maybe talked about it, a golf watch. I don't recall.
This just feels very familiar to me. Keep going.
I think it's familiar because it makes sense. No, we talked about a photography watch that had... but it wasn't green. It was that Leica... It wasn't Leica. Wasn't Leica watch? No. No, it was that Notice... collaboration that we talked about with the ISO thing. I don't think we've talked about a golf watch. So Ronda Quartz GMT Movement. And hang on, let's get to the spec sheet here. $449 because it's Veyer. Veyer keeps everything really inexpensive. 39 millimeter case, 46 lug to lug, 10.8 thick. Ronda Quartz GMT, 150 meters of water resistance. $450 like for a quartz GMT that looks really attractive. I don't think you can go wrong with this.
No, I think this is great. Yeah.
And there's some novelty, right, in the GMT bezel. It runs from E minus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then going counterclockwise and then clockwise 1 through 18. So the idea, like you still get the functionality of a GMT bezel, but also in the functionality of being able to score your golf game and then, you know, make a couple extra clicks and just be like, oh, the bezel doesn't lock. This must be my score. Right. It's not a novelty watch. It is a novel concept. This is not a watch that you would be exclusively wearing at the golf course to not look like an asshole. This would fit anywhere.
Right. Right. No, it's great. And I really like the scoring convention, right? You turn it.
Because I'll never be minus five.
You turn it, you know, one to the left for a bogey. You turn it one to the right for a birdie. I mean, the reality is that's all the information you need to know. It would be nice to know, like, what you got on any given hole, and that's not going to tell you. But this will allow you to keep track of your score. The only problem I have, and I think I made this joke the last time we talked about a golf watch, is I would run out. I'm going to run out because 18 over is a pretty good round for me.
That's a good round of golf.
Right? I'm like, oh, what do I do with the other 15 strokes?
They don't count because you can't keep them scored.
Yeah.
No, it's guaranteed to improve your golf game. I don't know that we've talked about a golf watch because I remember when we were talking about shock resistance, I spent some time with ChatGPT trying to do math that was like far beyond me.
Oh boy.
Trying to calculate like the shock that would occur while striking a golf ball to your wrist. I'm not smart enough even to get AI to do those calculations.
What we do know is it's negligible. Yeah. We do know that much.
But if you get it just wrong, though, it's like you get that weird vibration in your hands, like hitting hitting a baseball right to your testicles, kind of weird vibration.
No, you know, Veyer, you said you think I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Veyer. You know, they're not doing a lot of innovation in their design, but they are keeping it safe in a way that I appreciate.
Safe, consistent, and diversity, right? You can get almost everything in quartz or automatic. You can get into these gateway watches that I love are totally adequate designs.
Yeah. This is an attractive watch. I would wear this. I would buy this. I wouldn't think twice about that. I like it.
I want some more of it.
I like it. I love it.
That's what I was hoping to hear.
Yeah, Andrew, I'm going to talk now about Yema.
Would you like to ask me a few questions?
I'm going to talk about Yema.
Yema, you didn't send me a Yema link,
did you? I sure did. French indie brand Yema has supplied the French military with watches for many, many years. That's something they do.
Oh, you did, but it's not... I didn't open any of your links.
And they oftentimes also make those watches available to the public, which not every brand does. Yema has now released or has collaborated with the French Air Force. It's the Air and Space Force, I believe, for an official watch, the official watch of the French Air and Space Forces.
Look at how good that logo is.
And they have also made this available to you, to the public. And I love this watch. Unlike the Precedis Army watch, I think this thing is just terrific. So this is a Flagraph Pilot French Air Force coming in with a three-hand Mecha Quartz movement, which is a terrific choice. Everything is gray. It is very, very matte and gray.
And camouflage, which is something that I'm a little iffy about.
And it does have a trick up its sleeve in the way of camouflage. So this is a stainless steel case, and they have camouflaged it with different pressure of blasting to achieve a camouflage pattern in the blasted mid case.
So it's not Cerakote, it's not PVD, it's not powder coat.
It's blasted stainless steel, which has been blasted at different rates that create camouflage. I love it. You're so. You're a little bit.
I'm so on it. I like the.
I really like it.
I like the ingenuity of the process.
You're not wild about the.
I'm product. Not wild about the end result. Yeah. But the way that they went about achieving it, I really like.
We've got a white Yema logo, a simple white Yema logo at 12 o'clock, and then the red, white, and blue logo of the Air Force and Space Force of France at 6 o'clock.
And it looks so majestic and like almost whimsical, but not. It looks lovely. This is what a logo collaboration should bear on the watch.
You know, and this could be a...
could be an Olympics logo. It could be a rowing team logo. It could be a collegiate logo.
A thing that happens where the thing you know isn't cool, but I just don't think this is ugly in the way the U.S. Army logo is ugly. I think this is really nice, and the watch is such a banger. It has a Mecha Quartz three-hand movement in it, which beats at, I want to say, 4 beats per second. It's a two hertz movement. So I think that's 4 beats per second. I know because it's Mecha Quartz, it's going to be accurate to within seconds per month. And it also means that it's thin.
Like, how much better would that have been?
So this is a 530. This is a $530 watch that is super attractive with a 9mm case height, excluding the double dome crystal. So I think it comes in at like just over 10, like 10 and a half with the crystal. Man, fantastic.
Or this, because it's an America 250 watch, right? The options were precisely endless.
Various army logos.
I'm perturbed.
Yeah, they did the novelty watch. Anyway, we're not talking about that, Precedus. We're talking about
Yemas. We're talking about this Yema banger with a roundo on the nylon strap.
And, very nice.
Not a roundo, a rondel on the nylon strap.
Yeah, this is
great. Terrific. Gray on the dial. Yeah, as Yema is known to do. They again knocked it right out of the park.
Yeah, and I love the Seiko movement here. You know, Yema's got obviously a lot of choices in the movements they use. I think going with the Seiko Mecha Quartz three-hander here is such a subtle and really intelligent move. Gets the price on this thing way down, which is maybe a requirement. I don't know. And you can get these for $530.
Yeah, I'm wondering what their spec sheet requirements are. Like if they mandate quartz for a service watch. Or,
yeah, it's possible. Yeah, it's possible.
And there's lots of reasons to do that, but I think there's also a fair amount of reasons to not do that. Because I think the CMM, like that micro rotor, but that might drive the price outside of.
That's a $2,000 watch, yeah. $1,500 if they're cutting corners. Yeah, no, this is a this is an affordable watch. I think it's probably required to be affordable.
It also might be getting issued. That could be part of it too.
It is like, the official watch of the French Air Force. So, yeah, I think you may very well be right.
I mean, there's probably 800 of them, like people in the French Air Force.
I don't know. I'm sure it's not a huge Air Force, though. Yeah.
We'll do a quick Google.
I'm going to guess, Andrew.
$3,000 or less.
Yeah, I was going to say $2,500.
$40,500.
How many?
40,500 active duty personnel.
In the Air Force?
Yeah, French Air and Space Force.
That's a lot.
That's way more than the 800 that I suspected.
Andrew, what's next?
Okay, next up for me, we have some new... Oh, close out. We have some new color variations from Hamilton, a brand that we've talked about that we see in the wild with some kind of frequency. We have some new green and blue iterations for the Hamilton Khaki Field 40mm. And that is all.
Yeah, this is actually the Power Reserve.
Yeah.
This is actually the Power Reserve, which is a watch that... When they released this in black and white, I wanted to, I think I expected to not like it because
it's a well-executed weird. Power Reserve indicator.
They do so well with this. Not only that, but it makes sense to have a Power Reserve on a hand-wind, a hand-wind movement in a way that it doesn't make sense with an automatic. Power Reserve actually makes sense here. This is a thicker watch than the standard Fair Field watch, which
they're 11.95. Bugs me
a little bit. But
a 40mm watch, 11.95, I think I'm good with those dimensions.
And Hamilton does great with their colors. This sort of dusty blue and dusty drab. These look great.
This is what OD is. This is what that color should be.
Yes.
In like all iterations.
Correct. I think these are great. And
they come on a bracelet. They're
just new colors, but I am into it.
They work.
They come in a bracelet and... Hamilton's very, very, very nice pass-through with the leather accents. Mm-hmm. I have one of these on my Khaki Field right now, and I love that strap. It's such a nice strap.
The Khaki Field has been knocking on my door.
Yeah.
Throwing rocks at the window at night.
I think if you don't own one, you just ought to pick one up and try it. It's a watch that
I love it.
Always have in my collection. I love it.
But I want to put it on like an Erica's Original or a Nick Mankey.
Sure. Sure.
I want the bracelet, but I probably would never wear it on the bracelet.
Last watch for me. Christopher Ward has released 5 new versions of its 12 titanium 36mm watch. 5 new versions of these. And they are sugar candy themed. I think perhaps like Sour Patch or Gumdrop themed. And they have a dial that is meant to replicate that particular texture. I don't know how closely they've accomplished that goal. With that said, it is an attractive texture dial. I am not always high on textured dials, heavily textured dials. This is good.
Yes.
There is...
Because they're not uniform. They're really irregular and almost like random texture shape across it.
We've got these in sour apple green, cola crystals brown, fizzy orange, cherry pop red. I'm going to say red with finger quotes because it's pink, and blue sherbet blue. And berry burst purple.
So you're missing the purple.
And berry burst purple. These are all very, very vibrant. I think that's a fair phrase. They're very vibrant, but they're good. Yeah, so I said five. It's six new colors, excuse me. I was like, my math isn't mathing. These are 36 millimeter titanium 12s, and they're just great. I've tried the 12 on in the bigger size, and I thought this is a little big. I have a feeling that the 36 12 is probably a really nice size. And they're under 9 millimeters tall, 8.95 millimeters tall. And titanium with a rubber strap, this thing is going to wear like a swatch, right?
It's going to wear like a nothing. It's going to wear like an Iron Man.
We've got Kostlik certified Solita 300 1B movements, which is a great choice. And they are a lot of money.
Yeah.
$2,350 for these. So, you know, if you really love it, but that was, I saw that and I did a gulp.
But these again are a watch. Like, I wonder who is buying these.
I think they're going to sell these, man.
They're going to sell them, but I'm wondering who's buying and wearing these watches. I love the 12. I don't recall the last time I saw a watch that looked like that in the wild.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, they've clearly aimed this at a unisex market, right? Because of the size, we know that this is going to appeal to men and women. I think it's fair to say. So they've theoretically increased their market by some number. I don't know. I can't imagine it's double, but they've increased their potential buyer by some.
By at least 2%.
Yeah. So, yeah. Whatever that number is, we don't know. But it's expensive. Yeah, that was my only reservation. Gosh, this is a lot of money for that watch.
I like the color match rubber.
Me too.
I like the 12 as their experimental platform also.
I don't have any honest to goodness criticisms about the watch, because I just don't. But I do think it's a lot of money for what this is.
I'll try out one of the 36s and report back.
They've got a screen printed. They're calling these pick and mix. Is that maybe a candy reference? I don't know. But they do have a screen printed see through case back that I find a little bit over the top.
There is a mention here of bulk candy.
Yeah.
Like buying candy by the pound, and you just go to the bins and you scoop it out. And
I can't remember what the store was that we had in the United States back in the late 90s, early 2000s. There was a store that we had at the malls. You'd go to the mall and there was a bulk candy store, but it wasn't called Pick and Mix.
It wasn't Pick and Mix. I can see it.
I wonder if Pick and Mix is a reference to something British that we don't know about.
Yeah, I can see the store still.
Right, with those big
tubes. With the tubes of candy, and they're tubes all like stuck together because people are putting their grubby little kid mitts in there. God, that's probably where COVID came from, was candy stores in the 90s. It was just lying dormant. It wasn't
Chinese monkeys. It was
the candy store. It was just store. Waiting for grubby spit fingers.
What else you got, Andrew?
I can be done. Yeah, I can be done. There's nothing ever else really exciting.
Well, then other things, what do you got?
I recently got some new kitchen shears. So I've had the same set of kitchen shears for 16 years.
Okay.
And they were a set of OXO and they were fine, right? They break apart in the middle. They're the comfort grip because OXO is the target brand of cutlery that's like kind of surprisingly good. The steel holds an edge. It's nice and thick. It's really got a comfortable grip. Oh, the Good Grips brand, like I have a chef's knife and a Santoku and a tomato knife from them. And I've used the shit out of them. They sharpen well. They're comfortable. They hold up. But I've had the same kitchen shears for that long. And the other day I was using them and I realized that just through poor treatment as or maybe just longevity, when they were closed, the tips of the shear didn't come together anymore.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, well, it is time to replace. So I did a dive into what kitchen shears I should buy, because I can't imagine that in the last decade, kitchen shear technology has really advanced, because it's just scissors.
Right.
It's just scissors.
Yeah.
So I was looking for... And I think
scissors are one of those things where the technology peaked at some point in the past.
Like basically when it was invented.
Yeah.
You know, like the technological advancement in scissors has been more comfortable grip.
Yeah.
And tighter tolerances of manufacturing. So what I kept finding was these was this Wusthof stainless steel come apart kitchen shears. And what I was kind of surprised by, I was like, these I feel like I should be spending more money. Because these are $55 for a pair of kitchen shears, and they've got a crunching agent in the handle. They've got a couple little pry tips on the end of the handle. They have a bottle opener built in. I got these and immediately was like, these should be more than $55. The tolerance, the manufacturing tolerances on these, like you can hear the friction between the blades. They come to a perfect point. They come apart really easily. They feel really good in hand, though there's no like comfort grip or anything. It's blasted steel for the handle and then brushed for the tip. The only thing that I don't dig is because I use a magnetic board. They don't sit flush because each side of the scissor head is beveled to come down to a point. So they can't. They're like an angle sitting against my mag board, which kind of bugs me a little bit. I don't have a way to rectify that yet. And I don't actually know how I'll rectify it, if I even bother to. But I love these. And my guess is that you, like me, have kitchen scissors that might not even be kitchen shears. They might just be scissors that are in the drawer in your kitchen that you're using. These are crazy sharp. I have, and I spatchcock a lot of chickens. I go through one a month, probably, like one chicken spine, both sides a month with my kitchen shears. So they get heavy use. I am very excited to start cracking bones with these. Super comfortable and $55. Like that's nothing when you're buying kitchen cutlery.
Yeah. This is actually, sort of an apt discussion for me. I have just in the last like month been looking at kitchen shears, and I think I've settled on a pair from a company called Heritage Cutlery. I've sent you a link. It's an 8-inch poultry shear from Heritage Cutlery. They're a New York company that was recently bought by Klein, and they make all their shears in the U.S. I'm coming at it a little bit differently than you are, clearly, but I think what I'm going to do now is I'm going to have to get these and we'll have to compare, because
I like the side by side because they're the same price.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're the same price. I think you'll probably get maybe better tooling manufacturing in yours, but I think the actual kitchen functionality, because with the offset handle like this, you there's just ergonomically different.
I think maybe more leverage, but slightly less precision.
For poultry, I think you're absolutely going to have a better experience cutting spines out. But for everything else that you use your kitchen shears for, I think there might be some angle, like ergonomic limiters.
Yeah, perhaps.
But I am excited to do a side-by-side. I'm making coca bean t- tomorrow, so I'm cutting my first chickens.
I like it. I like it. Andrew, I've got another thing. It's once again a twofer.
Do me.
Which I know you call cheating, but this time they genuinely go together.
They do.
This time they genuinely go together. I was in the market for a workbench broom type of system, a workbench broom system, and I think I talked about Harry J. Epstein's last week.
Not the Epstein that you're familiar with.
It's a fantastic tool store out of Kansas City. And I wound up, I was perusing their website for things that I might be interested in. And I found this just absolutely delightful counterbrush. It's a dustpan counterbrush made by Magnolia in the United States. It costs a whopping...
How do you make it for $6.25?
$6.
Never sell it for that.
And 25 cents. And this is a horsehair wood-handled brush.
Oh, they're getting the refuse from the glue factories.
This is a dustpan brush. Made in the U.S. I'm not sure where Magnolia is making its product. I know it's making it in the United States.
Waco,
I'm not sure.
It's Chip and Joanna Gaines. That's where they get all the horse hair.
That's right.
They also own an Elmer's share.
And with that, I wanted
it's only one review.
A dustpan. I wanted a dustpan that would match this thing aesthetically, but also functionally. I wound up with a Genuine Joe heavy-duty black metal dustpan, a 12-inch dustpan. Which I think at one point was also manufactured by Magnolia, but is maybe now not, or maybe it's white labeled to someone else. Anyway, it's a 20 gauge steel, baked enamel dustpan. I've hung these things on the wall above my workbench and I just love them.
It feels really nice to have a bench broom and dustpan. Easily accessible.
They're just like aesthetically, they're right. This is a $12.77 dustpan. So for under 20 bucks, I've got these products that I will almost certainly have for the rest of my life, right?
Yeah, you're not going to replace them.
I mean, these are just going to be my brush and my broom and dustpan for the workbench for forever, right? Like, unless I get really into doing things on my workbench. These are going to be the tools that I have hanging above my workbench.
If you get really into doing that, you're going to get some kind of like vacuum and ventilator system.
And I just adore them. I adore them. I hung them and I put them on the wall and I was like, I love these things. you know, this is a show ultimately about things, you know, our favorite things. And these are some of my favorite things. Oftentimes, our favorite things are expensive. Sometimes they're not. These are decidedly inexpensive things, and they work very well. They're well made. The brush, at least, is made in the United States. The dustpan doesn't say it's made in the U.S., so I have to imagine that it's not. And I just am so... It was one of those sort of like... almost impulsy. I saw it and I was like, yeah, I got to get that. And then I got to find the dustpan to match it. And I'm just wild about it. They belong in the garage too. Like you can just tell aesthetically, like these belong in the garage. They're perfect for hanging on the wall above my workbench. And when I'm done working, I can just sweep, sweep, sweep into the dustpan, into the garbage. I know that that's the idea, right? This is not a complicated proposition.
But you found one that you like, and that's what matters.
And I'm just delighted with the purchase.
Mine was more expensive and from Lowe's.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you would go get something from Home Depot or whatever, or Lowe's, and it would be less charming and probably less good and more expensive, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm so happy with this purchase.
Mine are charmless.
Charmless. And mine are charming.
My dustpan is...
one charming damn pig.
It takes up a lot of... It's got a higher wall than yours, though. I can use it as a shovel.
Okay. yeah, that's all I got.
That's a good other things.
Andrew, is there anything else that you want to add before we check out for the day?
Never once.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. If you want to go to our website, it's watchclicker.com on the internets. There's probably HTTPS and slashes. But watchclicker.com will get you there. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that at Instagram, at 40 and 20 underscore watchclicker or at watchclicker. If you want to support us, and oh boy, we hope you do. Hey, look, we got two new supporters this week.
Look at that.
And we appreciate you guys so much.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us. It really means a lot, and we really do need it to keep this thing going. And don't forget to tune back in next week for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.